tell you a little story. I've been watching the Mets pretty much every game, I don't know, for weeks. I mean, it... Anyway. And so, there's a lot of very interesting stuff going on there. And one of them is that the opposing team's pitchers are hitting Mets batters. I mean, it's very frowned on. That, you know, pitches are going between 80 and 100 miles an hour, and they're very hard. The ball's very hard. The players wear armor. They wear helmets with special guards over their faces and special armor on their arms, the exposed arm when they're batting. But it's still really dangerous. Not everything is covered, and players do get injured and hurt. And it's just, it's scary, and it's really bullshit competition. Because, you know, what happens? You don't want to have that on your mind while you're trying to hit a thing that's going 100 miles an hour by you and is spinning around. You know, hitting a baseball, if you've ever tried it, I have. It's impossible. It's just, you know, you're in front of one of those machines that throws the ball at this. And this was many years ago before they were pitching. I mean, they've gotten so much faster now. Anyway, so the other night, the Pittsburgh pitchers were hitting Mets players one after the other. And finally, it boiled over. They hit Pete Alonso, who is the... he's the leader of the team, I think. Yeah. And so a big guy, home run hitter, leads the league in RBIs this year. And by all appearances is a nice guy. I mean, he's competitive as hell, but he's a nice person. And he's angry for other reasons too, by the way. It's not just this. I mean, but he had enough, and he faces off with the pitcher. And then both dugouts empty, and the relief pitchers come in from the warm-up area, and the umpires get in the middle, and out come the managers and the coaches, and everybody's standing up, and you're waiting to see what's going to happen, right? And meanwhile, the commentators, and one of the things that's nice about the Mets is that unlike the insipid people that they have on Fox or ESPN or Apple. Apple is the worst. I haven't listened to Amazon, to be fair. But our guys are good because the two commentators are both former Mets stars who are good at this, and they have a rapport. And, you know, it's like listening to Walt Frazier on the Knicks games. I mean, it's not nowhere near as much fun to listen to a Knicks game when it isn't Walt Frazier, when it's not on MSG. Anyway, I digress. So the commentators are talking while this tension is building, and they say something really important. And this is why you ought to watch sports, because give up watching CNN or MSNBC, because that's just bullshit. They worry about the wrong things. And here are these guys up there, and they cut, right? It's not like they have some special vision. They just know about this subject, and they care about it, and they can relate to it. And they've been out there on the field in this situation, maybe not exactly this situation, but they can empathize. And what they say is, at some point, it doesn't matter what their intentions are. And it's a profound statement. I know it's really simple, but it's also profound. It's like if you're constantly throwing the ball and hitting people, when most people, I mean, they said these are professional baseball players. These are, no matter how bad and Pittsburgh's bad this year, no matter how bad the team is, these are still the exceptionally good athletes. I mean, they're just playing against people who are better than they are, but these are amazingly talented people because there are so many more people who want to be there than can possibly be there. There are a lot of pro leagues feeding up into the major leagues and at all levels, and people are willing to do that. They're willing to play baseball on the chance that someday they will get to play in the major leagues. And so they say, you know, and it's because it's very Freudian, right? It's like, okay, if you're hitting the guy more often than is even remotely reasonable, then you have to want to be doing it. It's like, right, what you say, what they're really saying is it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter what you think. You may think you don't intend to do it, but if you're hitting somebody all the time, yeah, you intend to do it. You're just maybe giving you the benefit of the doubt. Maybe you don't know that you intend to do it, right? And then at the next level is, who the fuck cares what you know and what you don't know? What matters is they just made abortion illegal in the United States. That's why it's such, you know, obviously that was a very shocking little turn there, right? We went from hitting somebody with a ball, by the way, somebody who's there voluntarily. I mean, they're not forcing him to stand there by the plate. But in the case of abortion, they are forcing people to do things much more dangerous, by the way, than standing in front of a baseball, a pitcher, and having them throw baseballs at you. Which, when they say it that way, it sounds pretty fucking dangerous, right? But I don't know. What brought this to mind was I read something that I read two years ago on this day. And I said, if the Republicans can nominate, get another conservative on the court, we're going to be in a, quote, taxation without representation, quote, situation. And it's true. I mean, the country is nowhere near behind this. I think what's going to happen is over the next couple of years, if this doesn't get reversed immediately or very quickly, is that the numbers of people who favor abortion are going to go through the roof. It's going to be 99%. Because this isn't like whether or not you're in favor of the death penalty, because they don't put to death enough people so that the average person knows somebody who's being executed. That's the numbers just don't match up that way. It's like, you know, by this point in time, you probably do know somebody who's died of AIDS, and not AIDS, of COVID, right? Maybe you know somebody who's died of AIDS. Actually, I'm not sure if I do. My memory isn't so good. But I do know that I know somebody who's died of COVID, and by now you probably do know someone too. And it's going to be like that. Only instead of it being caused by a virus, this will have been caused by Republicans. And, you know, we spend so much time worrying about whether or not the Trump people, the Republicans, the fascists, whether they're going to erupt. And while we're so busy about worrying about them, we overlook the fact that they're actually attacking us. We're the ones that should be erupting. And they will too, by the way, because the ban on abortion affects them too. And when they see the ramifications, I mean, it's nice when you talk about it. When Lindsey Graham talks about it, he presents the case for banning abortion as skillfully as you could possibly do it. This guy's a lawyer. He's a great politician. He's got his arguments all set up. He touches every emotional button. But he's only telling the story from one point of view, and he's missing the point of view of the family and the mother and all the people that are affected by a child and all the complications that can come up in pregnancy and how much of an imposition pregnancy itself is. to make that choice for somebody else that they're going to spend of a very large portion of their lifetime now, or worse, or way worse. Very dangerous thing. So you have to say after some amount of time, it doesn't matter what they think they're doing, whether they know how mean and corrupt they're being, it just doesn't matter. It advances to such a level that it isn't something that you can waste any time thinking about. It just simply doesn't matter how you act. And at some point you do have to act. So that's what I said 2 years ago is I said, there will be a revolution. And I stand by that. Again, we haven't seen the full effect of this yet. Just hasn't been enough time yet. The babies that are being denied abortions today won't be born for another X number of months. They haven't been born yet. And never mind what happens to the mothers. That's already happening. And you know, just leave you with this thought, is that if news were doing their job, that would be showing up on the news, and it isn't. You get Lindsey Graham up there spouting his stuff. I don't care about what the spokespeople say. I want to know what's happening to the people. That's a little bit more expensive to do, requires more work. The formula they have is lazy and repetitive and boring as hell and very, very anger-inducing, because you know that while they're wasting all this airtime talking nonsense, just repeating the same story over and over again, the whole world is falling apart. So they're not only being, their corruption is very much a part of this. And because they do the reporting, we don't tend to notice that. They're very good at deflecting the blame away from them because they own the microphone. Anyway, just some thoughts. I said I don't have anything to blog about, but obviously I do have something to talk about. One more thing, actually, before I go. What got me more radicalized very, very quickly was watching, I haven't even finished the first episode of it yet. It's long, of the PBS Ken Burns special on the Holocaust, how the United States responded to the Holocaust. And first, defining what the Holocaust is. As a person, and if you read my blog, you know this, as a person whose whole life has been shaped by the Holocaust, I only realized that later in life, that it was the it was the environment that created me was an environment of people who had just run away from their homeland for their lives and somehow pulled it off. And this Ken Burns thing, I'm sorry none of them are alive so that they can watch it and tell me where they fit into this story, because I had always assumed that it was relatively easy for them to get into the United States. We never had that discussion about what kind of obstacles were in the way, if any, to get into the U.S. I know about what happened to some extent about what happened in Europe, but I can tell you that a lot of the things that is in this story, I'd say it's mostly in the past tense. I felt the aftershocks of this and felt them so clearly that they were just unmistakable. They talk about the anti-Semitism in the United States and how openly anti-Semitic the government was and how Roosevelt changed that, but it didn't change all at once by any means. But the anti-Semitism was there very much when I was growing up in New York City in the 1960s. And how do I know? Well, I have specific memories of events, But the way I really know is my own feelings about Jews. And therefore myself. And the self-loathing that I felt. I still feel that the word Jew is a dirty word. I can't get rid of that. That was part of my foundation. Where did that come from? Well, probably a lot of it came from my parents and grandparents and their parents and their grandparents and so on and so forth. I mean, things like that, basic beliefs, have to primarily come from being handed down from previous generations. But it was also the environment of Queens in the 1960s that the kids were being brought up by parents who were the ones that they are talking about in the Ken Burns document documentary, it was very real. I understand it when black people. I've read a lot by black people histories, fiction. A couple of years ago, over the last couple of years. And one of the constant themes that comes through is self-loathing. Is that when you are subjected to the kind of humiliation that black people, African-Americans, were subjected to, are still subjected to in this country, slavery and Jim Crow and whatever this is, it's going the wrong way, I gotta say, you know, is that when you mistreat people that way, one of the byproducts of it is they hate themselves because they believe somehow it's the hate coming from the other people gets inside of you and radiates out. You feel it about yourself. And it's pernicious? Is that the right word? Fucking deadly. It's why we don't get rid of this stuff with laws. It's not just about laws. But about the Republicans, it doesn't matter what their intentions are, what they know, what they don't know, whether they're going to heaven or hell, none of it matters. They have their own reasons, whatever they are, for doing the things they do, and they have to be stopped. And at some point, you have to say, I don't give a shit what they threaten to do. That was one of the big tricks that Hitler and the Nazis played on the rest of the world. People were much more active. And I keep going. All right, how long have I been talking? The people, according to Ken Burns, people of the United States were demonstrating for saving the Jews in Germany, and the Germans, Hitler, said this was why they were so angry with the Jews, because they're running the world, and we have to stop this, and you see what we're saying? So then the people protesting would debate. They'd go, well, you know, maybe he's got a point. Maybe if we stop doing this, they'll stop doing the abuse. You see, it doesn't work. That's where it doesn't matter why they abuse the Jews. You don't have to think about that. Whatever they tell you, you know it's not true. And you know it's not true. They were plotting the extermination of the Jews long before they took power. It's in his book. It had nothing to do with the protests in the United States. It was whatever. Doesn't matter how they got there. This is what they're doing. Same thing with Trump and the people that follow him. The thing that's remarkable about watching this thing about Hitler and the United States is, okay, we've come full circle. I'm so much more familiar with Trump now. What I see in Hitler is Trump. You know, they say, don't be too quick to call this Hitler when you look at Trump. Okay, I don't have to. I'll call Hitler Trump instead, because that's what it is. And I got to say, the people of the United States, for all of their in action. They must have, well, we'll find out how it turns around. They must have let some Jews in because, well, because I'm here. Anyway, just a note, my project is coming along great. I was actually hoping to get the whole thing out by September 18th, and I changed my mind about that. I like the way the development is going, and I want to try more ideas out before going public with it. So, but it's become a lot of fun, and it's very interesting work. And it's work that I've actually wanted to do for quite a few years, and now I'm getting to do it, so it's good. Anyway, all right, thanks for listening. Talk to you later. Bye.